Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Still Finding Out How People Are Impacted and features Olivia Swedberg-Jinger in an interview with Dr. Petra Kern. Hello, I'm Dr. Petra Kern, the editor-in-chief of the Imagine magazine. Welcome, Dr. Olivia Swedberg-Jinger. Thank you for joining me today on this Imagine podcast. The COVID-19 pandemic has raised great concerns for children's mental health and well-being by caregivers, service providers, and professional organizations. In this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to find out about challenges you face, how you promote good social and emotional development in young children and infants as well, and what supports you give to their parents, caregivers, and communities. We have prepared 10 questions for you, and I would like to start with the first one. Where do you work and what is your role, Olivia?
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me. So I direct the music therapy program at the University of Kentucky. I also have an important role as a parent of a 7-year-old and 9-year-old. And I think in light of what we're talking about, I can't forget about that role too.
Absolutely. So my next question goes right into our topic. What's on your mind, Olivia, when you read about the rise in mental health issues among young children due to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, so much is on my mind. In terms of the children who I work with, and on a pre-COVID, during pre-COVID times, the COVID pandemic has really impacted their ability to get not just music therapy services, but other important services. So the children in the NICU at the hospital on campus, when music therapists were not allowed to see them, they missed out on that key service. The full-time music therapists, thankfully, are now back at the hospital and working with them. But, there were gaps in services for a lot of children. And also at the Child Development Center, where my students do work and where I do some supervision, when daycares were closed initially, children missed out on so much, including music therapy, but also things like occupational therapy, physical therapy, play therapy. I know a lot of folks who moved things online that were really hard to do with young children. So, I think about those things a lot. I also think about, and in the quote unquote return to normal that we're, whereas now in 2022, there are a lot of things that are returning to the way they were pre-2019. And I'm mindful of the fact, though, that children under 5, as of right now in February, there's still not a vaccine that's approved for them, and that there are adults making decisions about, things that impact them. And I worry about them being forgotten. And I worry about voices of people speaking up for their needs not being heard, among other things. So, yeah, that's what's on my mind when I read about the rise in mental health issues. I also think about the mental health of parents. As a parent, and thinking about how closure of schools and changing policies and all of those things impacted my family. I also think about families who, were already on the edge before the pandemic, families from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, families who were already struggling and didn't have the same support and safety nets. And it makes me think about infants in our neonatal abstinence care unit, right? And the parents that we work with who, who often turn to substances to cope with really hard situations. And so I think about the rise in substance use and how it impacts parents and families and infants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that brings me to my next question. When you talk about the NAS babies and parents, how has COVID-19 affected their mental health and also the other clients who serve through the university and your students? And how has the mental health of your university students been affected?
Yeah, those are all great things to think about. I think we're still sort of finding out how people have been impacted, but you know, the information that's emerging is that all of those groups you just mentioned have been impacted, and you know, figuring out what do we do now going forward. I think about my students who, when we shut down, when our school closed down in March 2020, in my medical music therapy class, we were learning about the contextual support model from Sherry Robb's research in pediatric music therapy. And so, you know, I thought about the human needs that that model talks about for autonomy and competence and relatedness. And in that model, it's applied to hospitalized children, right? But I asked my students, how has your autonomy been impacted as we've, you know, as we now have all of these restrictions? How has your competence, your feeling of your ability to accomplish things, how has that been impacted now that everything's transitioned online all of a sudden? How has your relatedness, you know, your ability to connect with other people been impacted? So I've been thinking about those kind of parallel impacts, you know, the things that that we learn about as music therapists that our clients experience, even pre-COVID, that are exacerbated by a pandemic. And then I think about, you know, how are we as music therapists and humans and students and parents, how are we impacted in similar ways? So that's kind of a long-winded roundabout answer to your question. But I think for all of us, the take-home is for all of us in some way, our autonomy, our competence, our relatedness has been impacted. And for people who, you know, we're already in vulnerable or precarious situations pre-pandemic, the impact has just been greater.
Right. And as you said, we don't know the full impact yet, what will sustain and what we will see in the future. But do you have already ideas how you will adjust your services and your teaching to those mental health needs?
Absolutely. It was sort of serendipitous that right before everything shut down for COVID, in March 2020, I went to a conference in Atlanta on trauma-sensitive teaching, trauma-sensitive schools. And one of the things that I learned about was Bruce Perry's neurosequential model and the sequence of engagement, which the simple part that I like to share with my students is the idea of regulating before we relate, before we reason. So regulate, relate, reason in that sequence. And so it's based on the idea that when we're overwhelmed, when we're experiencing trauma, our ability to self-regulate is often impacted. And that if we're feeling unregulated, you know, if my heart is racing, if I'm breathing fast because I'm anxious, you know, if it's hard to focus because I can't sleep, that impacts my ability to relate to myself and to others. So it impacts my emotions and my ability to connect with other people. And then both of those things impact my ability to access higher level cognition. So reason, you know, learning, memory. One adjustment that I made based on that learning that happened just before COVID shut everything down was for my students, really having us focus on, for having my students and myself, everyone in class, focus on how are we regulating, right? How are we sleeping? How are we getting enough food? Are, you know, all, everything changed suddenly and it sort of threw our whole homeostasis out of whack. So how can we regulate ourselves? How can we then think about connections with other people and our emotional needs? And really, you know, checking in with myself and my students on how are we doing in those areas before we try to focus on cognitive tasks, right? Because I don't know if you others had that same experience. I found it really hard to focus when everything shifted in March 2020, you know? So that was one way that I adjusted my teaching. I really took it back to try to focus on those two things first before learning could occur, right? Regulate reason. So I would do things like, okay, let's take a minute at the beginning of class to just check in with our body. You can turn your camera off on Zoom. Take a deep breath. Notice any tension you're holding in your body. Maybe think about, when was the last time I ate? When was the last time I slept? Do I need a snack? What does my body need if I can't get it right now? What changes can I make so I can get it soon, right? And then, you know, trying to do things to keep people connected. We would play games on Zoom in the middle of class. Monitoring really carefully the amount of things that I was trying to teach. So that was an adjustment that I made for my students that I told them, you know, here's why we're making these adjustments. I want you to think about this as you're working with clients through telehealth. And then later, you know, back in person, because the pandemic's affecting all of us. And so, you know, if you can think, regulate, relate, reason, and sort of adjust accordingly based on the needs that are coming up. That was a recommendation that I made for them in working with clients. And I'll be honest, even as certain things are returning to normal, thinking in that framework for me has been really helpful. It's something I'm going to continue to teach going forward.
Excellent. Well, Olivia, you're certainly one of the experts for trauma-informed care in our field. And it's always refreshing to hear you talking about this topic again, as you have done before with Imagine. Now you talked about your students and how you prepare them for the situation and thinking about themselves and so forth. But what are ways to help children struggling with pandemic-related stress, fear, or grief through music interventions? What comes to your mind here?
So I think in addition to regulate, relate, reason, for students, we can think about working with children in similar ways using music. So using music with a regular beat can help with regulation or co-regulation. Being mindful of the sensory stimulus in our music room and how it meets or doesn't meet the children's needs for sensory input is something we can be really mindful of. When we're thinking about building relationships in music, you know, making music as a group can be something we can do to help build connections. You know, doing things through music like honoring how people are feeling, you know, letting them improvise based on how they're feeling, right? So I think if we think regulate, relate, reason through music interventions, there's a lot we can do there. But I'll also share some things that I did as a parent that I think might be helpful for music therapists working with young children. You know, my children found certain things reassuring when everything changed and they were all of a sudden, you know, at home. So, you know, figuring out what routines are important to them, what stability do they have that we can maintain when other things are unstable? What's predictable? What's consistent? And how can we keep those things within our circle of control? So maybe it's certain elements of a routine that are reassuring for them and finding out, you know, which elements those are that they want to keep. Giving them as much control and autonomy as possible. So letting them choose things, even if it's a small thing. I know when there are things that are out of my control, you know, that I read in the news or with the pandemic, sometimes I'll shift my focus to, well, one thing I can control? I can organize my desk. You know, what are 5 choices that I can make in my environment right now? So that's a coping strategy I use. And we can teach that to children. You know, what are 5 choices I can make in music right now, even when there are things outside of my circle of control? I think giving them things to look forward to, giving them things to be excited about, and then honoring those. So maybe in one session, finding out what's something they want to do the next time that they can get excited about and let them anticipate it. And then, you know, show them that they can count on you to bring that in the next session. That can help build trust in a situation where, you know, a lot of people are missing trust. It can be hard to find trust when the world seems upside down. But beyond that, I think honoring any feelings they have, you know, acknowledging and validating, and sometimes being open that we feel some of those things too, and that that's okay, that they're not alone. Mm-hmm. I think that can be really important in working with children.
Right. And that answers almost my next question. How can parents nurture their child's mental health? So when we're talking about infant and early childhood mental health, we always look at the whole system, how they interact with each other and what the relationships are between the parents, and but also the greater community. So you talked about already the routines, what the parents could also use or you do as a parent. Are there any other specific easy things to think about in daily life for parents?
Yeah, I think for parents, any parents listening, I just want to say solidarity. You're amazing. This has been a hard journey for us. And I just want to encourage you to focus on doing things for yourself, because those are going to help your children too. You know, I've realized as a parent, if I am anxious, if I am exhausted, you know, I'm not going to be as present for my children, and it's going to be harder for me to give to them. So, you know, focus on your own self-care, and that's going to help your children. When I have limited time and it feels like focusing on self-care is just another thing to add to my list. I take comfort in things that I can do with my children that help all of us. So, you know, finding things that regulate me and my kids that can feel like self-care all around.
Like a nature walk or something like that.
Like a nature walk. That's a great example. Like a nature walk. Reading for me, reading stories with my kids at bedtime is something I look forward to because I love to read. And finding things that we all love to read, or, you know, watching a favorite movie together, or, you know, so planning time to do things together. That help regulate all of us. That's been something that's really helpful for me as a parent. And then I think another thing that I have to remind myself is about that circle of control. You know, when sometimes I get overwhelmed thinking about what does the future hold for my kids? What, you know, there's so much we don't know, and I have to bring it back to, okay, what can I control right now? I can go read a story for my kids. You know, I can go jump with them on the trampoline. And one thing that reassures me is that the research on from our colleagues in family studies and marriage family therapy, you know, I think about the motto that they have, which is when you're working in relationship and in families, the idea of doing small things often is what matters, right? And so I remind myself of that. I'm doing small things daily for my kids, and that's going to add up and make a difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now we talked about the family system, but how can we as music therapists best support communities to build sustainable mental health and well-being for infants and young children and their families?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned the systems in place. You know, it might feel like there's a lot out of our control. One thing that I try to do is in any place that I can, you know, speak up for policies that support families and that support children, like things like paid leave. But I think within our immediate circle of control as music therapists, our more immediate circle of control, you know, thinking about things like cost, travel, modality of sessions, you know, the things that relate to how we serve and interact with children and families, and seeing how the services that we provide fit into the broader context of what families are facing. I think that's something important that we can consider. And I think validating parents and supporting them and their emotional needs, and recognizing that, you know, that is a great way to serve children, is another thing that we can do within our more immediate circle of control.
Sounds great. Olivia, you're always so resourceful. Are there any recommendations you have for further readings or organizations to look up on this topic?
Yeah, so a great one for parents and for music therapists, one that has resources all around, is the National Child Traumatic Stress Network. They have resources related to, you know, helping children through all different kinds of trauma. And certainly the COVID pandemic has been a collective trauma that's affected mental health for a lot of people. I also think the Sesame Workshop, so Sesame Street, you know, they have a Sesame Workshop and they've addressed some really big issues, including mental health in really age-appropriate ways for children and for families. They have great videos and resources. And so those are things that I know music therapists have used some of their deep breathing songs in sessions. And I, as a parent, have used those with my kids too. So those are two resources that I can think of off the top of my head.
Those are good ones. Thank you for those. So cool. I have two more questions for you, Olivia. One is about the children, the pandemics. What are your hopes for them?
My hope, my big hope is that those of us in the position to make change and to make decisions, like the people who are in power now, that we can push for systemic change based on things that we learned from the pandemic and places where we see, you know, a need to offer more support or to strengthen safety nets. My hope is that as adults, we can be responsive to the needs of the pandemials, that we will listen to the needs that we might not know yet, because those of us who are adults now, we haven't lived through the pandemic as a child. We don't know what that's like. And so I hope that we can see children as experts on their needs that arise moving forward, and that as adults, we can listen and respond to those needs. That's my big hope.
Right. So my final question is for our listeners. Can you share some advice for them or how they can face this mental health crisis?
Yeah, for any listeners who are struggling with mental health concerns right now, I want you to know you're not alone. There's no shame in struggling right now. You are valued. You're not alone. And there are people who you can connect with who will listen and support you. There's no shame. And I think we need to do more to reduce the stigma for mental health treatment. And so, you know, I'm open about the fact that I struggled with and continue to struggle with anxiety and depression and PTSD. I see a therapist. There's no shame in that. I'm grateful that in this generation, there is less stigma than when I was a young adult. But I think we can do more. And I'm hopeful, going back to what I said about, you know, thinking about what we've learned from the pandemic and pushing for systemic change, that we can provide community care for each other, which means, you know, building those connections so that we can offer care to others, but that we can also feel comfortable reaching out to others when we need help. So for anyone struggling with mental health challenges, just want to encourage you to reach out where you can and remember that you're not alone.
Thank you for sharing your insights, Olivia. It was great talking with you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Imagine podcast, produced in 2022.